If you want to know a man, dig in his fire pit. The phrase was from the roughs, maybe Kolos in origin. Basically, it meant that you could judge a lot about a man's life by what he threw away or by what he was willing to burn in order to stay warm. Wax moved through the mists on alimentic jumps. 11 was not late these days, particularly not in the heart of the city, but it should have marked a time when most men and women had begun to seek their beds. Labor started early in the morning. Only a sizable portion of the laborers in the city didn't have a job to get up for right now. That was reflected in the busy streets and busier pubs, not to mention the soothing parlors he passed, still open well into the night. Those were places where the downhearted could seek a different kind of relief, in the form of an allomancer who, for a small fee, would wipe away their emotions for a time and leave them numb. Rioting parlors were a different beast. There, you could choose the emotion you wanted and have it stoked within you. Those might be even more popular, judging by the line he saw outside one. He eventually reached the location he'd set out to find, Ashweather Carriage and Coach, a large open yard at the northern edge of the Octant where a fleet of carriages of various styles was stored. Rich-looking landaus with retractable tops, conventional buggies with less lavish upholstery and wood to attract a modest clientele, a few Surrey style with frilled tops. By far the most common in the carriage park was the standard road coach, the four-wheeled vehicle with a completely enclosed passenger compartment and room at the top front for a driver. They called them Barringtons in the city, after Lord Barrington, and though the paint jobs could vary wildly, the style was pretty much standardized. Wax's own coaches were Barringtons. He counted 7 in a line here, all lit by electric lamps atop towering stanchions high enough to light the whole yard and adjacent large, low buildings. Those were stables, of course, as his nose confirmed. All of the Ashweather Company's carriages were painted a shiny black, common for vehicles used as cabs in the city, and they had a round shield on the side proclaiming the Set family heritage. A shield painted silver, the color that had scraped onto the bricks in the alleyway outside the church. Bleeder had likely fled in a coach just like one of these, one that had been told to wait while Bleeder killed the priest. Wax inspected each vehicle in turn, running his fingers over the silver-painted shields on the sides. No scrapes.
Can I help you?
Steel sight indicated a person walking up the row of vehicles. No weapon held, but metal buttons on his coat, a ring on each hand, some change in the pocket, and a watch in his waistcoat. A few pins in the collar of his shirt, very small lines, gave Wax an idea of how tall the man was. Wax turned toward the voice. The man turned out to be a pudgy fellow in a distinctive formal suit with long tails. Wax had known more than a few sets in his time. He'd never gotten along with any of them. Lean or fat, rich or scrawny, they all got the same calculating look on their faces as they tried to estimate how much money Wax would be willing to part with. This set's eyes flicked toward Wax's suit, which was rumpled, swum in, and missing the cravat. With the duster on, he likely didn't look very distinguished, and the man's expression hardened. Then he saw the tassels on the duster.
My lord! Would you like to hire a coach for the evening?
You know me.
Waxillium Ladrian, I believe.
Good.
Wax dug into his pocket and removed a small steel sheet engraved on one side. His credentials, proof that he was a constable.
I'm on constabulary business. How many of these coaches do you have?
23.
Lots of coaches still in service for the night, considering the hour.
We work as long as people are out, Constable. And tonight, people are out.
I need a list of the drivers who are still working, their routes, and any prearranged clients they picked up today.
Of course.
Set seemed more relaxed as he led Wax toward a small building in the center of the carriage yard. Inside the building, Set fetched some records from a desk.
Too eager.
The man hurried over and offered them. Whenever someone worked with the authorities too easily, it made Wax's eye twitch. So he took his time browsing through the list Set proffered and kept an eye on the man as he did so.
What percentage of your pickups are impromptu, and what percentage are arranged ahead of time?
Half and half for the black coaches. The open carriages are more spur of the moment.
Set had a good game face, but something was bothering him. What was he hiding?
You think everyone is hiding something?
Wax flipped through the pages.
Stay on the task at hand.
Wax dug into the list, hoping Bleeder had decided to hire a coach for a pickup to be certain she had her escape planned, rather than just grabbing a cab on the street. Finding the one who had driven her would be useful either way. He looked over the records for the drivers still out for the night. Each had a few prearranged pickups over the course of the day, but only three had been scheduled around the time of the murder. And two of those were repeat customers with a long list of pickups in the past. That left one. A person to be picked up in the 4th octant and to be driven at liberty, meaning they were to be driven as long as the client wished. Shanwan was the name listed, a terrace name. The word meant secret.
I need to find this driver.
Wax held up the list and pointed.
Coach 16, that's Chapao's. No telling when he'll be back. You probably don't want to wait. I can send you a message when he returns.
Maybe.
Suddenly, a young woman in trousers and suspenders burst in.
Boss, late night play getting out on bond weather. They're going to want rides.
We've sent coaches there already.
Not enough. Boss, there are lots of men on the streets. Common men, the type that will make the rich folks nervous. Playgoers will want carriages.
Wake Joan and Forgeron. Send them and anyone else you can rouse. Anything more?
We could have more wheels out for certain, particularly near the pubs.
Coin shot.
Wax guessed, noticing the bag of metal bits, probably pieces of scrap, the young woman carried.
You've been using Allomancer runners to scout for busy areas to send drivers.
Is that surprising?
It's expensive.
You have to spend money to make money, Constable. And as you can see, I'm having a very busy night. Perhaps you could lead me to it, if I promise
to... Coinshot, you see coach number 16 out there? I assume your boss has you checking in on the drivers, making sure they're doing their jobs?
How?
You don't hire an allomancer just for traffic reports. Coach 16?
She glanced at Set, who nodded. So, whatever Set was hiding, it probably didn't have to do with this driver. In fact, it probably didn't have anything to do with Bleeder, just your average run-of-the-mill lawbreaking.
At least one allomancer on staff.
I didn't see 16 on the streets.
The young allomancer turned to Wax.
But that's because Chapao is at a soothing parlor on Deacon Street. His coach is around the corner.
At a soothing parlor? He's on the clock!
I know. I thought you'd want to hear.
Yes. And what of the rioter you have on staff? Are they there too?
Nah, he's on...
Using emotional allomancy to drum up customers. Riot passing people, making them feel tired or urgent. And more willing to take the coach, conveniently parked right across the street.
You don't have any proof? I'll be speaking with my attorney. I'll have you know that my people are off limits for interrogation without a judicial order.
Take it up with the Constable General. I'm sure you'll be hearing from him soon. For now, I need a description of this carriage driver of yours, along with the names of any pets he owns.
Marcy walked along a counter topped with a row of rifles, each accompanied by a domed steel helmet, a folded heavy jacket, and a box of ammunition. Rusts. She hadn't realized the constabulary had access to these kinds of weapons. She looked back at Milan.
Well, we're ready if a Koloss warlord decides to invade again.
A pair of corporals, both men, were looking over each weapon to confirm it was in good repair. Though she spotted more than one pair of bleary eyes, the place was alive with activity. More and more constables were arriving, called in for extra duty. As they entered through the main doors, they tended to stop as Marcy had, looking at the row of weapons. Perhaps that was why Aradel had ordered them set out like this, a quick visual reminder of how dangerous things were growing in the city. Marcy rounded the front counter and entered the offices behind. A young woman corporal passed by, handing Marcy a warm cup of dark tea. It smelled strong, cooked down to increase the concentration of caffeine.
Yep. Awful.
She drank another sip anyway. She wasn't going to embarrass herself by asking for honey when everyone else was chugging the stuff like it was some kind of contest. Milan trailed after her, looking around the room with interest. The voluptuous Chandra drew glances. And, well, stares. It wasn't often that a gorgeous 6.5-foot tall woman strode into the constabulary offices clad in trousers and a tight shirt. She seemed to like the attention, judging by the way she smiled at the men they passed.
Of course she likes the attention. Otherwise, she wouldn't have chosen a body so exquisitely proportioned.
It seemed blatant to Marcy, After all, technically, Mei-Lan wasn't even human.
I didn't expect to find women in uniform here. I assumed you to be an oddity.
The constabulary is very egalitarian. The Ascendant Warrior serves as a model for all women. You won't find as many of us here as in, say, the solicitor's offices, but it's hardly considered an unfeminine profession.
Sure, sure.
Mei-Lan smiled at a young lieutenant as the two of them made their way to the back rooms where the records office was.
But I've always found humans to be rather sexist. A natural result of your sexual dimorphism, Vendel says.
And Chandra aren't sexist?
Hmm? Well, considering a male Chandra you're talking to today might decide to be a woman tomorrow, I'd say we have a different perspective on all that.
Surely you're exaggerating.
Not really. Wow, you blush easily, don't you? I'd have thought you'd find this natural, considering your god is basically a hermaphrodite at this point. Both good and evil, ruin and preservation, light and dark, male and female, etc., etc.
They reached the doors to the records office and Marisie turned away to hide her blush. She really wished she'd just find a way to get over her embarrassment.
Harmony's not my god. I'm a survivorist.
Oh, yeah, because that makes sense. Worship the guy who died rather than the one who saved the world.
The survivor transcended death.
Marisie looked back, hand on the door.
He survived even being killed, adopting the mantle of the Ascendant during the time between Preservation's death and Vin's ascension.
What, really?
Yes. Harmony wrote it of himself in the words of founding Mei-Lan.
Huh. I really ought to read that thing one of these days.
You haven't?
I keep meaning to. I never can find the time.
You're over 600 years old.
That's the thing about having an eternity, kid. It gets really easy to procrastinate. Are we going in that room or not?
Marisie pushed into a room filled with filing cabinets and tables piled high with ledgers and broadsheets. This was Aradel's doing. He liked to keep his thumb on what people were saying and writing in the city. So far, he didn't do much with the collection besides watch for reports of crimes his men had missed, but Marisie had plans. Unfortunately, Constable Micklin, who ran the records office, was one of Reddy's closest friends. As Marisie entered, Micklin and the other two people working there looked up, then immediately turned back to their files.
Who's the civilian?
Micklin sat at his desk in the corner. How did he get his hair to stand up straight like that? Almost like a patch of grass growing from a pot.
Special investigator from another jurisdiction. Lord Ladrian sent her.
I'm led to believe this wisp hunt is your doing. I barely got to the offices tonight before I was sent back here to dig up information on that damn breaking.
What did you find?
Marisie slipped between two large filing cabinets. He had them arranged like sentries and stepped up to his desk.
Nothing. Dead end. Waste of time.
I'd like to see what you found anyway, if it's not too much trouble.
Micklin rested his hands on the table.
Why are you here, Combs?
I thought Aradel told you. The dam breakage might—
Not that. Here, in the constabulary. You had an offer to join the Octon senior prosecutor on a permanent basis, with a letter of commendation of your internship with him. I looked into it. And now, what? You suddenly want to chase criminals? Strap on some six guns like you're from the Rusting Roughs? That's not what police work is like.
I'm well aware, but thank you for the information. What did you find?
He tapped a folder with the back of his hand.
Rusting waste of my time.
Marisie took the folder and retreated between the filing cabinets. She wished it were only Micklin she had to deal with, but the two other constables made their opinions known with quiet sniffs of disdain. Marisie felt them glaring at her as she led Mei-Lan out of the room, clutching her folder.
Why do they treat you like that?
It's complicated.
People tend to be. Why do you let them treat you like that?
I'm working on it.
You want me to do something? I could scare the cynicism right out of those people, show them you've got friends that
no,
want...
No, please. It's nothing I haven't dealt with before.
Mei-Lan followed her as she scurried to her desk outside of Aradel's office. Marisie settled down. Mei-Lan pulled over a chair.
You sure you don't want me?
No. No, please.
I'm sure your friend Waxillium could come on over, fire off a few slugs, force them to stop being such sour lips.
Oh, survivor, no.
The image of it made Marisie sick. But Mei-Lan obviously wasn't going to let this go without an explanation.
I'm beginning to realize that Waxillium is part of the reason why they treat me as they do.
Marisie opened the folder Micklin had prepared.
Life in the precinct follows a hierarchy. The sergeants start as corporals, work in the streets, put in 10 or 15 years doing a hard beat, and finally earn a promotion. The captains start out as lieutenants and mostly come from noble stock. Once in a while, a sergeant works his or her way up. But everyone's expected to put in their time at the bottom.
And you?
I skipped all that. I applied for and got an important position as Aradel's chief aide. Wexilium makes that worse, as I'm associated with him. He's like a whirlwind, blowing through and messing everything up. But he's also good at what he does and a high-ranking nobleman, so nobody complains too loudly. I, however...
Not noble.
Not noble enough. My father is low-ranked and I'm illegitimate. That makes me the available target when Wexilium is off-limits.
Melan leaned back in her chair and scanned the room.
Spook was always droning on about things like this, that bloodline shouldn't matter as much as capability. You doing what you did should be impressive to everyone, not threatening. Hell, you said the place was egalitarian.
It is. That's why I could get the job in the first place. But it doesn't stop people from resenting me. I'm the way the world is changing, Melan. And change is frightening.
Huh, and the lower ranks just go along with this. You'd think they'd like you showing that someone can jump in line.
You don't know a lot about human nature, do you?
Of course I do. I've studied and imitated dozens of people.
I suspect you understand individuals, then. The interesting thing about people is that while they might seem unique, they actually play into broad patterns. Historically, the working class has often been more resistant to change than the class oppressing them.
Really?
Marcy nodded. She started to reach for some books on the small shelf beside her desk, but stopped. This wasn't the time. In fact, they might be witnessing one of the exceptions to this rule outside on the streets. And like many upendings of the status quo, when it did happen, it could be violent. Like a steam engine's boiler that had been plugged up, given no release until suddenly everything exploded. Nobody liked to realize they'd been had. People in Ellendale believed they were living the good life. They'd been told all their lives that Harmony had blessed them with a rich and lavish land of bounty. You could listen to that sort of talk only so long before starting to wonder why all the incredible orchards were owned by someone else, while you had to work long hours just to feed your children. Marcy dug into the contents of the folder, which listed the events surrounding the flooding to the east. Melan settled back in her seat. What a curious creature she was, sitting with head held high, meeting the glances of people who passed without the least concern about what anyone thought of her. Micklin was annoying, but he hadn't let his displeasure undermine his work, which was meticulous and thorough. He'd included constable reports on the dam breakage, a piece written by the engineer who had investigated the problem, and broadsheet clippings from Ellendale regarding the disaster. Most importantly, there was a transcript of the recent trial and execution of the farmer who had caused the flood. He claimed he'd wanted to ruin his neighbor's harvest in an accident, but the saboteur had packed too much dynamite and had blown a hole in the dam large enough to cause the entire thing to fail. Dozens dead and crops destroyed throughout the region, causing grain shortages. The defense had called witnesses who claimed that the saboteur, a man named Johnst, had been acting erratically. They claimed he was obviously mad. And the more she read, the more Marcy was convinced he was mad, if only because Bleeder was.
Look at this.
Marcy handed a sheet to Melan. The Condra took it and read.
He couldn't remember the names of his children at the trial?
Seems like good evidence that Johnst had been replaced, wouldn't you say?
Yes and no. The old guard, they are really good at interrogating people and doing research before taking a new form. We don't have to do that so much anymore. Most of the forms we take are personas we've made up ourselves. If this was Bleeder, she must have been pressed for time.
Melan pointed to a section farther down the page.
This is much better proof, if you ask me.
Marcy scooted over, looking at the paragraphs indicated. Report of the execution. Prisoner was hanged until dead, rejected a final meal, and demanded it to be over with quickly. Grave desecrated two nights later, suspected to be the work of those who lost family in the flood.
Wow.
Marcy took the paper back. She hadn't reached that section yet.
Yeah. Escaping the grave, eh? She actually let them bury her?
Undoubtedly. Pa'alm is nothing if not dedicated to her craft.
Then why forget the names of the children?
No idea.
Either way, this seemed to be enough to take to Aradel.
Come on,